Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce has been a big, tough, rich opponent of much of the Obama administration's agenda in Washington. It swings a big stick, by far the nation's richest lobbying group. Now it's getting beaten up a bit itself by advocates of consumer protection, financial regulation, cap-and-trade climate legislation, by muckrakers who say its membership numbers are inflated, by some of its own members who are bolting, saying the chamber is out of touch. This hour, On Point, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce in the hot seat and fighting back, and who speaks for American business now. It has been pretty wild out there, including this week, a kind of bogus Chamber of Commerce press conference at the National Press Club. It was not for real, put on by an activist group, the Yes Men, assuming the identity of chamber staff, telling reporters the organization was reversing its stand on climate change. An official of the chambers, a spokesperson, suddenly burst onto the scene trying to break the whole thing up.
I'm Eric Wolfschlegel. I'm with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. This is not an official U.S. Chamber of Commerce event. I don't know what pretenses you're here. I know some of you in the press world, but this is a fraudulent press activity and a stunt. This guy is a fraud. He's lying. This is, a stunt that I've never seen before.
A fraudulent stunt. It's getting wild and woolly out there around the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. A number of its big members, Apple, PG&G, PNM Resources, Exelon, have left the organization entirely. Nike stepped off the board of directors. Of course, a whole lot more are hanging in there. We're going to hear from the Chamber of Commerce today. But I want to go first to Washington and Lisa Lehrer, a staff writer with Politico, who's been following this sort of heavyweight match on here between the White House and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and everything going on around it. Lisa, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
This has really ratcheted up into a major standoff here. You've written lately that the White House has become maybe just all too happy to take on the chamber.
That's exactly right. The chamber, as you mentioned, opposes a lot of the White House's major initiatives, their health care efforts, financial regulation, climate change, and the chamber is really, really powerful. They spent over $37 million on lobbying just in the last quarter, so that's only over 3 months. So neutralizing the chamber could be very advantageous for the White House. The chamber has a lot of money to spend on ads opposing their proposals, things like that. But it could also be a bit dangerous if it backfires. The chamber, of course, is one of the best-funded lobbying organizations in town, so they certainly have the money and the membership to make life difficult for the White House.
Did I read that their lobbying budget is 8 times bigger than the next largest in the country? Is that right?
That sounds about right. I know last year they spent $91 million on lobbying, and I believe that they've spent the most on lobbying of any association, actually, at all, since there's been records that we've been able to search. So their budget is really quite impressive.
Now, Valerie Jarrett, the president's advisor, is out just in the last few hours saying, no, playing this down. What's the evidence, though, that the White House has been looking to mix it up with the chamber? Clearly, the chamber's been ready to mix it up with the White House. What about the other way around?
I mean, I think the fact that Valerie Jarrett is talking to reporters and making comments about the chamber, and what she told me, I did a piece that ran on Monday about this, and what she said to me in a call was that that the White House doesn't, with all these members that you mentioned leaving the chamber, the White House doesn't know who they speak for, so they find it easier to just go around them and meet directly with CEOs. So those are fighting words. That's a pretty harsh harsh comment about this business association. Of course, there are also, reasons why, sort of political reasons why the White House would want to isolate the chamber, of course, to get their various proposals through. But also, meeting with lobbyists is sort of uncomfortable political optics for the White House. Obama campaigned on, ridding Washington of lobbyists. So the less lobbyists that are in the White House meeting with officials, the more they meet directly with CEOs, the better that looks for the Obama administration.
What about the sway of the chamber on Capitol Hill? Is it really in question here? I mean, some very big companies have loudly left, and some of them kind of slammed the door behind them. Of course, there are a lot of other companies who are still in those membership ranks.
Does the chamber look, you know, hunkered and bunkered down now, or still plenty of support in its community?
Well, I think I'm not sure the lines have changed much on Capitol Hill. A lot of lawmakers I spoke to say that they really defer to the local chambers. You know, they frequently speak at, you know, Barney Frank, who's the head of the House Financial Services Committee, a really powerful member up there. He said that he frequently speaks with the local chambers of commerce in his district, but he's less likely to have interaction with the National Chamber of Commerce. Of course, for Republicans, the Chamber of Commerce and a few fiscally moderate Democrats, folks like Melissa Bean, the chamber has been a strong supporter and has, you know, made donations and things like that. So they still work with the National Chamber to get those kinds of contributions.
Well, and what are we seeing? Has there been some kind of ideological change in the chamber's leadership in recent years that led to this real fireworks? Or is it the ideological change in the White House with the advent of Barack Obama as president?
I think there's a couple of things going on. I think there's been ideological change in the White House, of course. Democrats have been, over the past couple of years, have been really making a lot of efforts to reach out to business. So they've been sort of trying to divide and conquer the business community, and that means breaking up the chamber a little bit. You also, of course, have this massive economic, the Great Recession. You know, so that's that's put companies in a different position. They've become more dependent on the government. They've had to work more closely with the administration. So that's changed as well. And then I think, as you mentioned in the introduction, there's really been a series of missteps by the chamber. There's been a bunch of damaging stories. There's been this story in Mother Jones about their membership numbers that said their membership numbers is actually, they don't actually have 3 million members, as they claim, but more like 300,000 members. So that was a particularly damaging story for them. They've had these high-profile defections. I mean, to be fair, only 7 companies have left, but they've left really loudly. I mean, they've left with letters saying that they, how much they disagree with the chamber and things like that. So there's been a major shift there, too. So I think there's a couple different things going on that have led to this situation.
Lisa Lehrer with Politico, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to hear in just a moment from the Chamber of Commerce. Here's an interview that Business Week did with Adam Aston, his PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric Chairman Peter Darby, explaining why his company, a major power provider on the West Coast, had decided to resign from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
We've been a leader in climate change, and we believe that the emissions of carbon need to be controlled and limited over time because of the threat of climate change. We have articulated that position to the chamber time and time again over years. And as we evaluated the different statements they made and the positions they've taken, we concluded that their position was not consistent with ours.
Peter Darby, chairman of PG&E, they're out of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. 7 companies have left. A whole lot more are in. David C. Chavern, he's executive vice president of the chamber, joins us now from Washington. Mr. Chavern, thanks very much for being here.
Great. Thanks for having me.
So you've put out, a letter to your members saying, you know, stay put. It's an activist uprising. Pay no attention to it. Do you have a problem on your hands or not?
Not really, no. I mean, we've had a few members quit, as you noted, and it's always unfortunate when members quit. But we do have, a very broad membership. Our direct membership is 300,000, which I'm happy to talk to you about as well. So a few companies leaving, that happens. Actually, it happens just about every day, and we tend to add more companies than leave. So that kind of works out. The math works out well for us. But what's kind of unusual here is companies usually don't issue press releases when they leave, and so it's caused a bit of a kerfluffle, but it happens. We've been around 100 years. We're going to be around 100 more.
Are you stepping away right there from your 3 million membership claim? Are you falling back on 300,000? Was it exaggerated for a while in the way you talked about it publicly?
Let me explain, because I'm always very consistent in what we say, and so is the senior leadership. If there's been any confusion, we have 300,000 members. About 3,000 or 4,000 of that number are themselves other organizations, state and local chambers, associations of various kinds, and some of those are really big, and they have a large membership.
So those are members of other organizations. The organizations are affiliated with you, but the 3 million includes their membership and yours?
Yeah, I mean, usually the way I say it, we have 300,000 members, and we directly or indirectly represent at least 3 million businesses. Actually, if you take in this into account those association members, 3 million is probably a low number. But, yeah, our direct membership is 300,000.
You know, you weren't opposed to the bailouts that we saw a year ago, but you've been opposed to a lot of legislation put on the Obama by the Obama administration on the table since then. As a kind of challenge to the free market system. I mean, how could you be for big bailout but against the sort of steps that have been raised to try and ameliorate some of the circumstances people see as having contributed to the bailout necessity?
Well, let me take that one piece at a time. Mm-hmm. First of all, we were supportive of the administration, as you noted, with some emergency things they had to do at a critical time in the economy. Frankly, if you want to talk about controversies in our membership, there was a lot of controversy about our support for the stimulus package, our support for the auto bailouts, and the bank actions. That was really controversial in our membership, but we did what we thought we had to do and help the administration in a time of emergency. You know, ultimately, I think, though, what we're saying is we need to get back to a focus on what drives the economy and what's going to drive our prosperity in the future, and that's free enterprise. That's understanding that business at the end of the day is the answer here, not the problem.
And what we saw a year ago looked like a problem, and it looked rooted in business.
Well, certainly there were severe financial market and business problems last year, and one of the primary causes of that, from my perspective, is a whole host of regulatory failures that, frankly, the Chamber's been talking about for a long time. We put out a report on the poor state of the financial regulatory system 3 years ago.
David Chevin, please stand by. We've got to take a short break here. We'll come back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today about the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, of all things, and who speaks for American business now. The chamber is at the center of a huge controversy right now over its fierce opposition on top Obama agenda items: climate change, consumer protection, Wall Street regulation. Some very big businesses have left the chamber, a lot more clearly still in there. David C. Chavern, Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, joins us. Here's just a sample of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce sort of public sway in action, an ad created to fight the proposed Consumer Financial Protection Agency, appealing here directly to consumers.
This is Amanda Engstrom with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. We support strong consumer protection, but the so-called Consumer Financial Protection Agency is not the answer. It would add a new government bureaucracy that will make it harder for businesses and consumers to access credit, limit customers' choice of financial products, and authorize new taxes on everything from mortgages to ATM transactions. Visit StopTheCFPA.com and tell Congress to stand up for America's job creators.
The U.S. Chamber of Commerce in action in an ad there. Barack Obama complaining, President Obama complaining quite publicly about the chamber, and he described it in an October 9th press conference as an old-handed Washington politics and big spender on lobbying.
They're very good at this, because that's how business has been done in Washington for a very long time. In fact, over the last 10 years, the chamber alone spent nearly $500 million on lobbying. $500 million.
We've got David Chavern, Executive Vice President of the Chamber, with us in this hour. And with us as well, Rosabeth Moss Cantor, professor at Harvard Business School, specializes in strategy, innovation, leadership for change. She's authored the new book, Supercorp: How Vanguard Companies Create Innovation, Profits, Growth, and Social Good. Rosabeth Moss Cantor, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Tom. It's always a pleasure.
We're going to hear more from the chamber big boss himself here, but how do you interpret what's going on? Is this half dozen American corporations who have left the U.S. Chamber of Commerce a sign that there's trouble with the commerce, that it's not representing the leading edge of American business, or something else?
I think that there's a real shift in American business. And first of all, there is no unified voice of American business. There's different voices in different industries. And there are a lot of principled companies that I call vanguard companies that want to be ahead of the pack on climate change and protecting consumers. And they want to operate with values and principles and include some of the largest. I would put Apple and Nike in that category, but I write about IBM, Procter & Gamble, companies that put values at the center of the enterprise and are shifting the paradigm, or have the potential to shift the paradigm for American business and restore faith in capitalism. I mean, the public is so angry right now at nearly everybody, but they certainly have lost confidence in business as a whole, but it's not every company. And companies want to restore the respect of their customers, consumers, their employees. The millennial generation has a new set of values. And I know that those people work for Nike and Apple, and it's those voices, as well as activists, shareholders, that are encouraging companies to take more principled stances.
I want to ask how you see the Chamber of Commerce in that regard, but let's take it to David Chavern. David, do you see the Chamber as representing sort of values, principles, the what outlook we need to succeed in this century? Are you falling behind some of your own corporate members or previous members on that front?
Yep. You know, we have a very broad and extremely principled membership. You know, for example, the Chamber is the host of the Business Civic Leadership Center, which organizes all of the private sector aid in disaster relief. It is a thought leader in terms of trust building and ethics for business. You know, we have the one thing I'll agree with is that there's no single organization that represents every kind of business. There are millions of businesses. What I could say is the Chamber is certainly the broadest, largest, and I think most impactful organization currently. But we work cooperatively with a whole range of business organizations, and they all have a particular thing they do. But I'm, ceding no ground on the virtues and principles of our membership, and including a number of the companies the professor cited.
But some of your ex-members, I mean, just on climate change, for example, you had one of your top officials saying we need a Scopes monkey trial to figure out if it's for real. PG&E Chairman Peter Darby, we heard him earlier, but, you know, he kind of slammed the door as he left the chamber, saying extreme rhetoric and obstructionist tactics seem to increasingly mark the chamber's stance on this issue. John Rowe at Exelon saying the carbon-based free lunch is over, suggesting you're not awake to that. What about those criticisms on the way? Are they just self-interested because these companies have, you know, renewable energy interests or something else?
Well, there's some of that. First of all, on the Scopes monkey thing, that was a ridiculous, wrong statement by someone who works at the chamber. It's been repudiated by me, my boss, all of the senior officials. It doesn't represent the position of the chamber, full stop. There's going to be a carbon-constrained future. There's going to be a future in which there's going to be an economic price on carbon. The question is, how do you do that smartly? How do you do that in a way that maintains economic growth? Because getting poorer is generally not a good strategy for addressing environmental changes. We want a climate change bill, and we've been very clear about that. I know the Scopes monkey thing is pithy and dramatic and people like it. It's wrong.
And your official said it. So it's somewhere in the mind of your organization.
Well, I employ about 500 people. So there's probably every kind of mind in my organization. I can tell you it doesn't represent the position, inclination, or thoughts of the chamber generally or the senior leadership. Full stop.
Let's hear from our listeners. Burlington, Vermont. Ted, you're on the air with David Chavern and Rusbeth Moss Cantor.
Yeah, thanks. I think this Scopes monkey trial thing, is pretty dramatic, and I'm sure that most of your chamber doesn't agree with that, but I was reading this article by Lisa Lehrer, by your guest, Tom, and she, mm-hmm. she has a quote from the leader, I think Tom Donahoe, of saying that what we decided to do is we're going to let the scientists argue the science with regard to climate change, and that disturbs me more than the Scopes thing, because no one's arguing the science of climate change, and I'm wondering how the gentleman from the Chamber of Commerce responds to that, and also, where were you when, when people like Goldman Sachs and the like were getting bailed out by the government? I mean, no one doubts that small business is a big employer in this country, but you guys should have been outraged by what happened with Goldman Sachs and the like, but we didn't hear from you then, so why are we hearing from you now?
Thank you, Ted. David Chavern, Ted's looking for clarity on the climate change front, quoting your top guy, Tom Donohue there, saying he says it still sounds ambiguous whether or not you see it as a reality. And what about his comment on Goldman Sachs and where your outrage is placed?
I wasn't there when Tom made that statement, but I think what he was saying is that the we're accepting that there's going to be a carbon constrained future. Whether there's a debate or not is really not our concern. The concern is, what's going to happen from a policy perspective going forward. And there will be an economic price put on carbon. There will be a carbon-constrained future. You can do that by legislation, by regulation, by taxes. There's a bunch of ways you can do that. The question is, how do you do it smartly? Now, with regard to the Goldman Sachs point, probably for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce to be outraged and to be criticizing people at the height of a financial crisis would probably not be a particularly responsible thing for us to do. Piling on when there were concerns about serious financial meltdown would, I think, have been irresponsible on our part. Is there stuff to be mad about? You bet. Now, there's a lot of stuff to be mad about in terms of the financial crisis, and we're mad about it, and we get that. But I don't know that would have been a perfect time for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce to be running around screaming.
Elizabeth Moss-Cantor, how do you look at this? I mean, Apple's reporting great quarterly profits yesterday, 47% up, terrific. They've been called, far and away the best technology company in the country. And yet they're the ones out the door. Nike, seen as pretty progressive country, they're the ones off the board. Is this, to your eye, a sign that on climate change the chamber is out of step with forward-looking companies? Or, in the pages of the Wall Street Journal, the critics have said, well, fine, Apple and Nike manufacture their products in China. So, they don't care if the U.S. cracks down on carbon emissions here because they make their stuff elsewhere, somewhere dirtier. How do you look at it, Elizabeth?
Well, first of all, I think that the chamber is not getting it in terms of change. This decade has witnessed incredible change in the context for American business. And I wrote Supercorp to show that companies that put values and principles that included the environment and health and education and products that were made way back, even products made in China, were made in responsible ways, are actually more profitable, get more innovation. That's why I call them supercorps. So this change in values, this change in whether some businesses want to just sit back and say, okay, well, we'll pay our dues in a knee-jerk way. Sure, the chamber has lots of members. I think it's just like an automatic renewal system. If they don't change, they won't be around for another 100 years. If they do change, maybe they will. But this is a new context. And I know that, for example, IBM has direct conversations with government, with the Obama administration. Their big campaign now is smarter planet, smarter cities. Let's use technology to influence energy saving, conservation, to connect communities, to make healthcare delivery work more smoothly for the people. They see that a social agenda aids their businesses. And some of the companies like Apple and Nike don't want to be associated with any organization that's going to undercut the message that they're giving to their customers, their boards, their employees. Again, it's a big push up from employees in these supercorps. They are the ones that come in with new values, and they want to make sure that the company behaves consistently with those values. And then they will work harder, they will make cool products like Apple does, and they will even ask the companies to be responsible way back in the supply chain, end-to-end responsibility. You're responsible for your suppliers' suppliers and your customers' customers, and that's the stance that a Procter & Gamble, IBM, Nike, Apple, and other great companies are taking. And so they don't want to be seen as behind, as defensive. I was hearing, David, you're making interesting points that all sound kind of defensive. Everything's fine. We're doing everything right. I heard that at General Motors 30 years ago, and they really didn't change fast enough, and look at what happened.
Oh, that there's a picture. David Chavern, is it possible that the U.S. Chamber is ideologically, in its view of the world, just not where it needs to be to keep American companies competitive, to keep them attractive in the way Elizabeth Moss-Cantor is describing?
Yeah, no reason for me to be defensive. I think most of the conversations about trying to put me on the defensive. Listen, we keep very close contact with the whole range of our membership, and we try to do the right thing both for the U.S. economy and for the future of the business community. I think, frankly, the professor has very limited understanding of our positions and our programs. We are leaders on education and business. We've been in that space for forever. We are leaders on the social involvement of companies in local communities. I mean, there's nobody who's better than the Business Civic Leadership Center. We are absolutely leaders in terms of pursuing the good values and the good things that business does. And frankly, probably most of the companies noted in your book are members of ours. So, am I defensive about the chamber? Absolutely not. We are being effective. We're doing what we need to do, and I'm looking forward to the future.
Rosbeth, he says, lay off. They're doing just fine. Thank you.
Yeah, and I did want to jump in because I wanted to say, first of all, calling me the professor is a little bit of a put-down because I know these companies very well. I certainly know the chamber. I also know local chambers, and I know that local chambers are often engaged in collaboratives that are making a difference. In Massachusetts, for example, there is a Progressive Business Leaders Network that is showing that business wants positive action on climate change, and that collaboration was in part behind Massachusetts getting a universal health plan, which is now used as a model for what the country could do. The question of how much we could do nationally anyway, but I know that business really wants, many business leaders want to be a little bit more activist. I understand the chamber had been active in education, et cetera, but we still don't have really good education reform in America. So a lot of this is
absolutely.
We want more activism. We want more activism. I mean, and so companies, I don't know who's going to pay their dues or not pay their dues in the chamber, but I just know that there is an emerging movement, and it's not just corporate social responsibility. In the supercorps that I write about in the book by that name, those companies are looking at values and principles at the heart of their business strategy, the products they make, how they make them, how they market them, how they talk to their employees, and how they engage in a very different way of doing business. Whether the chamber is relevant to that or not, they have different kinds of partnerships with governments that they have on an individual basis or through collaboratives that are local or issue-based.
Russell, so let me get one call here before the break, if you'd be so good. Tony in New London, Connecticut. Tony, you're on the air.
Thank you, and thank you for airing this discussion. Very important from our point of view. We are living in an enormously complicated world, and we need organizations such as the U.S. Chamber to play a constructive role in helping our decision makers come to a suitable and a reasonable plan to develop to deal with whether it's cap and trade issues or whether it's healthcare reform. The U.S. Chamber does not speak for the local chambers.
How do you know?
I want to make that point very clear.
How do you know that, Tony?
Because we have never been consulted on their agenda.
Are you in the local chamber of some one kind?
I'm the president and CEO of the Chamber of Commerce of Eastern Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are you a federation member?
We have 1,600 companies that belong to this chamber. We have never been consulted by the U.S. Chamber. Our process for developing our legislative agenda is driven by our members. We solicit. We have a questionnaire out as we speak. We listen to their concerns. Our board of directors decide on what the agenda is going to be. It's very democratic. I have, in my 5 years as president of this chamber, I have never received a call from the U.S. Chamber to solicit my opinion on their legislative.
Tony, David Chavin's got a question for you. We'll get it right after a break here, if you can hang on. David Chavin, Executive Vice President of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, is with us. Rosabeth Moss Cantor of Harvard Business School is here. Her new book is Supercorp: How Vanguard Companies Create Innovation, Profits, Growth, and Social Good. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and who speaks for American business today. Executive VP of the U.S. Chamber, David Chavern, is with us from Washington. Rosabeth Moss-Cantor has joined us from San Francisco, professor at Harvard Business School, author of the new book, Supercorp. We've got a lot of folks waiting to get on, but we've got Tony with us who heads up a local chamber in eastern Connecticut and was saying that he hasn't been polled and doesn't feel the national chamber represents him. David Chavern, you had a question for our caller, Tony.
Yes. I'm sorry, Tony. Is your chamber part of our federation, chamber federation? Are you a member of ours?
We pay you folks, I believe, $300 a year. So if that makes us a member, I guess we are.
Okay. The because we do a lot of polling and interaction with our state and local chambers. So if you haven't been getting that, as a matter of fact, I just came from a meeting in California with just leaders of state and local chambers where we were talking about the legislative year coming forward. So if you haven't been getting all of our polling and information, I will get on that. But we do a lot of interaction with the state and local chambers, because frankly, that's how, you know, that's our network. That's how we get out to get a sense about what's going on outside the Beltway.
Tony, you're president of the Eastern Connecticut Chamber there. When, let's just look at the issues, when the National U.S. Chamber of Commerce opposes the Consumer Financial Protection Agency, Shareholder Bill of Rights, healthcare reform, cap and trade on climate change, does that line up with your local chamber or not, or mixed picture?
No, I have actually made a couple of calls, at least maybe three recently, about the negative tone of advertisements that have been running in Connecticut. We've had some complaints from our local companies. We did a poll about, on healthcare, for example, we did a poll about 2 years ago where 82% of our members indicated that the healthcare system in this country is broken, and it's conducting business in Connecticut extraordinarily difficult. The objection that I'm hearing is that everyone agrees the system is broken, but there is it's a very complicated issue to resolve, and that the U.S. Chamber is not playing a constructive role in that process. That's the core of the objection I'm hearing from my members.
Yeah. If you polled our broader membership, it would be higher than 82%. You know, the system is broken, and in particular, you know, our members who, you know, if you look at business broadly, they insure something like 160 million Americans, the, you know, cost drivers are at the forefront of their mind, and you know, our biggest problem with the current legislation is it doesn't really get at these cost issues. But you certainly, you know, healthcare has been at the forefront of our members' concern for years and years and years, and remains there. And we want demand reform.
Though a lot of those pushing for it right now are describing the chamber as one of the major sort of hurdles to getting that done. You've got your reasons. Let's hear from Cookeville, Tennessee. Jerry, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I kind of have to agree with the Chamber of Commerce, because I believe like 95% of the businesses that they represent in the Chamber of Commerce are small businesses of under 100 employees. And the deal with the climate change bill, which mm-hmm. personally I think it just has to do with cyclical deals with the sun. I don't think it's really man-made created, because
okay.
over 30,000 scientists who claim that it's not man-made, but we won't get into that. But I just think that the Chamber of Commerce represents the small businesses, and if the government gets out of the way, it's the small businesses that keep this country running, not the large ones.
And you feel they're representing you pretty fairly then?
Well, I think they represent the small businesses real good.
Rosabeth Moss-Cantor, you're talking about some pretty big companies. Maybe you're missing the small business picture. Maybe they're lined up, you know, right behind the chamber. I don't know, maybe even on climate change, you hear a caller doesn't believe it's man-made, but what about small business in the chamber? Maybe that's who they're representing.
Well, first of all, then let's say that's who they're representing. I mean, but again, that would be a change. I think that we were hearing from other callers that they're looking for business. I'm not here to talk about, to attack the chamber in particular, but I do know that there are new voices arising from American business. Many of them are small businesses, principled businesses, Membership in the corporate social responsibility community is getting to be an incredible membership ticket for people. CEOs love being honored at those events. Small businesses are wondering how they can get involved. People as people want to make a difference in America. They understand that we're facing severe problems of a lot of kinds, and they want to see change. And so I agree with this exhortation to get out ahead of change rather than restrict and impede change and say, well, we don't like this, we don't like that. Let's instead get these movements going, because I hear that from small businesses as well. And in fact, I studied some smaller companies in the research for my book, and I think it's a value shift. That's the whole point. We have to think about what the American people value. The Obama administration is trying to get reforms that, yes, people have been clamoring for years. We have to ask, why haven't they happened? And then get on board to make them happen constructively rather than impede change. And that's what the businesses that I talk to want. And that's what many of us at Harvard Business School are teaching our students and want future leaders to embrace.
But here's a question for you, Rosebeth, if I may, from our website. Joe's writing says, you know, the Supercorp author just made a great point, he writes. He says, but then he goes on, it's kind of a criticism here. He says, it's about the brand and competitive positioning. The chamber probably is not the place for companies looking to push for a progressive brand ID, but others will stay because the chamber will continue to deliver in D.C. on the nitty-gritty. How about it, Rosebeth?
Well, fine. I mean, good. The chamber will do what it does. As I said, what I want is that progressive agenda. I'm not as concerned about maintaining any particular organizations, and I have concerns about the influence of lobbyists, et cetera. But I think the important thing is, how do we get action on a progressive agenda? And the businesses that want that are going to form their own organizations or take their own action.
But Joe's suggesting that's just about branding or you know, PR positioning, that they're really happy to have the chamber, and they're fighting for, you know, good old government go away.
Well, Joe, if you're in one of those companies, speak up, because leaders are hearing from their employees whenever there's a disconnect between the rhetoric of the company and what they say in the marketplace and what they do inside the company. And that's a push for companies to examine what they're doing and act more consistently. And I'll bet you anything that before Apple and Nike took the stands they took, they were listening to their employees and not just thinking about their brand in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. Employees want companies to behave with integrity and consistency, and they don't want just lip service to values. That's what makes them a larger-than-life supercorp, that they really stand for something important in the social good, and that they're consistent with their suppliers, their customers, and their employees.
Let's get a call from Virginia Beach, Virginia. Bill, you're on the air with David Chavin and Rosebeth Moss-Cantor.
Thank you. I was a member of a local chamber of commerce in the 90s, and I pulled out because it was my impression that the local chamber of commerce, as the national, is a more or less a political arm of the Republican Party. Their mantra was to endorse local Republican candidates exclusively, small businesses, and they're against taxes. But in my experience, they were not doing actually that much for small businesses. They were just using the same sort of good speak that the Republican Party was doing. Here, and I think it's true nationally, the chambers of commerce have been against consumer protection and also against employees. While they've been saying here and elsewhere that Republicans are for small businesses and creating the impression that small business owners are Republican, that's not true. Just as people in the military are not all Republican, it's probably similar to the rest of the country.
Bill, hang on if you would. Let me allow David Chavin to respond to your critique there. David Chavin, Chamber of Commerce is an arm of the Republican Party.
Yeah, absolutely not. We're looking for allies on both and every side of the aisle wherever we can find them. And frankly, right now it's politically it's hard for business everywhere. I mean, that's why we started this free enterprise campaign where we're kind of getting back to old messages of ours about kind of re-educating the public about the importance of business. We absolutely want friends on both sides of the aisle. It's critical. It's always been critical. It's obviously critical now. I flatly reject the accusation we're an arm of the Republican Party. And also, just to let people know, we don't get involved, never have in the history of the chamber gotten involved in presidential politics. We do get involved in state, in Senate races and House races and some state attorney general races. But again, there we're looking for friends wherever we can find them.
Bill, does that line up with your experience?
No, it's similar to the NRA. The NRA claims that they aren't with the Republican Party, too. But the NRA is very close to the Republican Party, as is the Chambers of Commerce. But I'm not a, what I would call a Republican. I'm more of an independent.
Yeah, Bill, I appreciate your call. I want to put a couple of specifics, David, to you. Why is the Chamber of Commerce opposing the Consumer Financial Protection Agency that's been proposed here? Why?
Yeah, it's a good question. Thank you. You know, the biggest problem in the financial regulatory area is too many cooks in the kitchen. I mean, between all of the banking regulators, the SEC, the CFTC, the FTC, the problem, one of the biggest problems we had in 2008 was there was all this activity that was taking place in the borders or regulatory dead zones between multiple regulators. You know, so we think actually adding a whole new one is compounding the problem.
But consumers got SEC, lost in that FTC, whole picture. How do you propose that they get some protection? I mean, people really got...
You're absolutely right there. Consumers need additional protection. But there are, A, we should consolidate some of the current regulators, and B, there are already folks in that space, including the banking regulators, FTC and SEC, who should do more, who should be given broader responsibility in the area. Absolutely.
But didn't get the job done.
You know, the answer here isn't yet another regulator.
What about a shareholder bill of rights? Why does the U.S. Chamber oppose that?
Most particularly because it's the design of the shareholder bill of rights is really to allow certain interest groups to get additional influence over the board. It's really not about shareholder democracy. Frankly, whenever people ask for opposing views on the shareholder bill of rights, they never go to people who run mutual funds or individual investors. It's usually state union pension funds that are most particularly interested in it, and they have a particular political point of view. We don't think, you know, that the boardroom is the right place for political points of view.
Mm-hmm. But we can kind of hear one. Brian in Hudson, Massachusetts, you're on the air, Brian.
Hi, how are you, Tom?
Okay, what do you think?
Good. I'm listening to this, and I'm just thinking to myself, basically what I'm hearing is, leave us alone. We're doing everything fine. Just leave us alone. And one thing I've discovered as an American is progress does not happen in our society without risk and without fallout. Someone's going to get hurt, but if we don't take the risks, we don't move forward. There's no way to move forward. There's no way to make the progress without the risk and without somebody getting hurt.
So what does that mean for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce or the White House as it maybe is tussling with the chamber? What are you suggesting there?
I'm suggesting that, yes, you may not believe, you know, one of the callers said that he thinks climate change is a cyclical thing from the sun. But if it's not and we do nothing, then we're screwed. At any rate, no matter what we do, it's going to improve our environment. So we need to take those risks. We need to move things forward. We need to move our processes forward so that we're taking care of the world, we're taking care of ourselves. Within that, some people are going to get hurt. Some small businesses are going to get hurt. It's unavoidable. But when we take the risks and move things forward to take care of ourselves, in the end, we generally better what's going on, and we can't do it without taking the risks. We can't keep things where they are. Keeping things where they are hasn't worked at all.
Brian, thanks for your call. Roosevelt Moss-Cantor, in Supercorp, you're highlighting companies you say are pushing forward there. But what if, on balance, you know, in toto, or at least perhaps as represented by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, I mean, you were saying earlier that you don't see them as leaning forward into these challenges. What are do the companies you're looking at change the picture then ultimately, or just go off on their own narrow ways?
Well, I think they're trying to raise standards wherever they operate, and they're trying to influence their peers. to raise those standards too, because of course if raising standards means they have higher costs, they want to spread those costs. And I have amazing stories not only from the U.S. but from other countries in which companies are working hard as positive forces to raise standards. I agree. There's always risk around change. So I think Nike, Apple, PG&E, Exelon, et cetera, made courageous moves, because usually it's true. Companies do things that are principled, but they do it a little under the radar screen. But they made this very public that they're taking a stand. And only when we take a stand, now the chamber will respond, however it responds, and maybe we will move things forward. In every industry, there are always some courageous companies. I think Aetna is being very courageous in healthcare by working with the administration as one of the few insurance companies to do that now, as opposed to opposing. There's never perfect legislation, but we can get closer and closer to a sense of progress. And I think that's what motivates employees. I think people everywhere want that. People want to see change. People are fed up, but they also want to see something positive. So I was happy to tell positive stories of companies making a difference, because business can be a positive and progressive force for change.
Rosabeth Moss-Cantor, Harvard Business School, author of the new book, Supercorp. Thank you very much for being with us from San Francisco today.
My pleasure, Tom.
And David Chavron, what about it with these corporate departures from the chamber? Will it change your policy stance or not?
First of all, as a country, we need a whole bunch of change. So getting back to the last caller, we've got the whole range of energy, infrastructure, education. I can go on and on about issues that need to be addressed in order for this country to be successful going forward. So we're not status quo at all. The one thing I'll note about Rosabeth's statement is, we are second to none, I think, and I will cede no ground in terms of the principles of our positions. And I would encourage her and others to take a real look at our actual positions as opposed to, the kind of cartoon versions that get out there.
Will the departure of these companies change your policy or not?
And no, because we have highly developed policies, then we're on a good path in terms of how we represent our members.
We're out of time right there. David Chavron, Executive Vice President of the Chamber of Commerce U.S. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.